This episode is sponsored by Interactive Brokers. And are you ready to put your predictions to the test? Well, with Interactive Brokers Forecast Trader, you can trade your views on key economic and climate indicators. Simply answer yes or no. For example, will the change in U.S. Consumer Price Index exceed 2.6%? Or will the average U.S. temperature in 2024 be greater than 54 degrees? If you agree, buy a yes contract. If you don't, buy a no. It's that easy. Contracts cost 2 to 99 cents. Correct predictions earn $1 at settlement, and incorrect ones settle at zero. Forecast contracts are commission-free, plus earn 4.83% APY on your investment with an incentive coupon. Visit ibkr.com/forecast and make your predictions today. IBKR is a member of SIPC.
The Disciplined Investor is all about you, your money, and the markets. Sit back and get ready for this edition of the Disciplined Investor Podcast.
This episode of the Disciplined Investor is sponsored by Horowitz & Company. If you're looking for a portfolio manager, look no further. Horowitz & Company, from seed through harvest, cultivating financial success.
We have a surge and a plunge and a plunge and a surge. New market reality is going on. Risk is up, but that's quickly undone. And the debate, the presidential debate, breathes life into a few sectors. Our guest today is Frank Curzio from Curzio Research. All this and much more on episode number 886 of the Disciplined Investor Podcast. Hey, welcome to the funhouse, the crazy barn, the thing that we call the stock market these days. I mean, that's okay. There's plenty of ways to make some good money with all that's going on. My voice is a little bit out. I'm going to have to get some tea here. But we're going to realize that, you know, in the short term and in advance of what is going on with regards to the election and, of course, what's happening around the world, that risk assets are going to see some volatility, but we know that there's ways in which to make money from this on the short term. And of course, I mean, we do all recognize, right? You do that it is the best way, if not one of the best ways, to make and obtain wealth over our lifetimes. Hey, it's Andrew Horowitz here at the Horowitz & Company Disciplined Investor Studios, which is about to get a major makeover, a refresh. We're kind of a little bit tired of the old look and feel of this. We redid it about 5 years ago, but wanted to change it up a little. So clearly there's a lot to talk about. But let's focus on what the topic is today and the thing that is on your mind. Because I know that after the debate that you realize that something's changed there. Now, whether or not you like this candidate, that candidate, doesn't matter. We're not going to get into that. But the fact is that we're going to get into that with our guest. But to suffice to say is this, that the race looks a lot closer. It is going to benefit certain sectors, hurt others. And immediately after the debate, we saw the move start. So that's something to keep aware of. Inflation, well, that report that came in was a bit hotter than desired this week, but markets kind of sloughed it off in favor of NVIDIA. Commentary that their CEO made that all is going well with the Blackwell chip. So that company is pretty much stoked massive, an incredible rally on Wednesday, all ahead of the September 18th Fed rate decision-making meeting. So, hey, since I need to get some tea and Frank Curzio is our guest, which allows us to spend a good amount of time talking about some really good information and topics, we're going to get right to that discussion right now. And our guest today is the very famous and well-known Frank Curzio, an equity analyst with close to, I don't know, 3 or 4 decades of experience covering areas of the small mid-cap stocks, the markets, the eco area. We get together quite often, especially right now. I want to bring Frank on because, you know, now we're post the debate. We're into a time that we're right butting up against the area of the potential and the very much priced in cut of rates. And I wanted to bring him on to talk about things that he's writing newsletters all the time. He's worked with major companies, well, top performers with the, he was with TheStreet.com. He worked with, I don't know if people know this, Frank. Did people know this, that you worked as a research analyst for Jim Cramer?
Yeah, for 5 years, I think it was. Yeah, he went to my wedding and everything. Yeah, I worked with him. I learned a lot from him. It was a good experience.
Has it changed at all over the years?
No, he's nuts. I was there when I was first, when he first started the show, like right there, like we were picking the buttons and stuff like that and choosing like the bye-bye-bye. So that's how,
yeah,
it was great how his show took off. But, he was very difficult to work with, but it was a great experience because I had my late dad, I followed in his footsteps, right? New financial newsletters, managed money for 30 years. Mm-hmm. He was kind of like a perma bear. And working for Cramer, he's a perma bull, and getting that experience from both of them and not only learning, but also realizing some of the mistakes they make and really helped me build in terms of being able to cover both of those markets and understand growth, right? I mean, look at PE ratios and people are like, the stock's trading at 50 times forward earnings. How could it go higher? And everyone said that if you look at every growth company, they all trade at 50, 100 times. If you look at Netflix, you look at Apple, you look at Microsoft and look where they are today. So understanding growth where 50 PE could be cheap depending on how fast your earnings are growing, and a 10 PE could be super expensive if you're not growing earnings at all. It was a good experience having the fundamentals, the technicals, and two great teachers. So,
you know, truth be told, just to stick on that point for a second, you know, in terms of PE, a lot of people use PE as an isolated standalone kind of ratio, right? You know, terrible idea, right?
Yeah. Horrible idea. You have to look at NVIDIA is cheaper today than it was pretty much the last 3 years, right? And people say it's expensive today. And that's the thing about NVIDIA. I mean, you should sell NVIDIA if you think that the multiple needs to come down. You should sell NVIDIA if the chart doesn't look good. Do not sell NVIDIA because you think that spending in AI is slow. No, if you think the slowdown in AI is slowing down. There's zero evidence of that. If you looked at every Mag 7 company, all hyperscalers, I mean, they're maxed out. We're probably in a second or third inning of that. But listen, if the multiple's got to come down, that's different. Maybe it should be trading at 31 times earnings. Maybe it should be trading at 25 times earnings or whatever. That's different. But it's in terms of spending and growth, that company is just it's going to grow earnings by over 100% for the next 2 years, average annually. So, you know, 32 PE, which is the same PE you have on Walmart. It's the same PE you have on Colgate.
And which both is of those unbelievable,
growing,
by the way.
Both of those companies are growing earnings by 10%. And NVIDIA is going to be growing in by more.
That tells you something. Now there is a combination of metrics that you should be using,
That's how you should. Like, you know, listen,
that's
not
a peg
the
ratio.
Same
that's called a peg ratio.
A peg ratio, and the growth component is huge because if you really look at a standalone PE, you would never ever own any growth. You never have a chance to have a grand slam. I mean, you lower your chances dramatically because the companies that are grand slams are all the Mag 7 companies that you could have bought, you know, 10 years ago, right? Mm-hmm. 15 years ago, even some of these cloud companies, technology, you know, they always seem super expensive and some of them don't fulfill those promises. And you see slower growth, like maybe the Snowflakes, you're seeing it in Salesforce now. But those companies, look at Netflix. Netflix was 100 PE for how long? And people didn't understand. They would look, and I didn't understand it like 15 years ago because everyone was like, you know, NVIDIA is... I'm comparing it to Comcast and you're comparing it to cable companies and media companies. And you're saying, wow, that's trading so expensive. But what you didn't realize is every single cable company was competing against NVIDIA because they own the space in streaming. And when you look at it differently, now you're seeing, wow, this PE, this market, now you look at a total addressable market that's 20x the times the size that you were looking at it because you were comparing it the wrong way. You got to be careful just looking at a PE ratio. And the reason why I'm telling you that is not because I'm a genius, because I made that mistake and I missed a lot of growth stocks.
That's a big mistake because that's the stuff that they talk about in a shortcut fashion on the TV shows, right? On the ones that you look at. They talk about the PE of this. They don't talk about the relationship of, like I said, price to earnings to growth. Because you got a company that has a PE of 10, but it's growing at 20 times. And you're like, oh, wait a second. What's going on there? There may be some reasons why it has a PE of 10. But the truth of the matter is that is a much more attractive company than a company that has a PE of 50 and it's only growing by 5% per year.
Exactly. And you know, you want to kind of compare in the industry. That's why if you look at the Mag 7 stocks, they're all different now. I mean, they were all going up tremendously, but you see the difference in Meta, which is not an expensive stock and growing much faster than almost everyone else in that space outside of NVIDIA. Apple, too, is very expensive considering its growth, but yet you could see this massive replacement cycle at AI. So I get it. Now you've seen the stock actually move, and that makes a lot of sense. A replacement cycle is, you know, if you're looking at the next generation of iPhones that comes out, it could be anywhere from 7 to 8% is like the rate that you would upgrade, that you would see of current holders. This could be, this could realistically be double that because they're offering something that you don't have any other phones, which is the AI capabilities.
I'm going to pull you back, buddy. I got to pull you back on this. Yep. I agree with everything you said with the idea that they actually have something that's compelling.
Oh, they do.
What do you mean they do? They absolutely do. What is it?
Data. They have everyone's data, everyone pictures, everyone. They have, you know, 100 million people would think about this.
But
think
as long
this.
As they
tell you why this is amazing. I'm going to tell you why this is amazing. Pretty soon, you're going to be able to take pictures and you're going to be able to talk to your phone and you're going to say, change the whole picture around, throw somebody else in there, make it live, do anything. You're going to have all these AI features. It's all about the data. They control, if you control the data, you control everything. And they have the data on
so for
all
example,
these people.
We'll take a picture. You and I will take a selfie.
Yeah. And you want to change your background. Put a lightning bolt in it.
I'll say, take the ugly bastard out of the picture.
Yes.
And they'll take me out. No, they'll take me out.
They'll take me out.
No.
And you could say, make a movie out of it, like a movie with, you know, with an old picture of, you know, maybe my dad had passed away and make a movie of me. I mean, the things that you're going to be able to do because they have all the data on their phone.
Now, that would be great. That's Google does some of that already. Google does some of that with their Pixel phone. And we know that. So Apple's in the catch-up mode with that. And I agree.
But do you know anyone who owns a Pixel phone?
I've heard of people that own Pixel phones.
I know 100 million people. That's the difference where, you know, they have some leeway to get this right. But it's all, when you're looking at AI, for anyone who wants to say they have AI and all, it's all about the, if you have the data, then you have the inference part of AI where you get the predictability.
And the beautiful part important. Of the data for Apple is they got all of it for free.
Absolutely. Just like social media companies.
How great is that?
And by the way,
who would have
Apple
ever thought of that?
Oh, I mean, your Apple phone too. Now, Apple used to be like this, you know, used to take the high road and say, we don't collect data. If you go on your phone, I mean, listen, I own my own phone store, which I didn't want to own, but I own a small stake and then I wound up owning the whole thing, like a, you know, side business. But now when you get a new phone, they have a ton of tracking devices that are collect, that are automatic.
Wait. Do you have cases? You sell cases?
I sell everything. Cases,
all these years, I'm buying cases when my good buddy Frank Curzio.
Don't ever buy a case at AT&T, Verizon, or whatever. Yeah. You can get it from China. It's the same exact material. They might not have the out-of-box name on it, but it's the same material, same everything. And literally, you'll pay $4 for it instead of $60. Don't ever buy a case at a store, especially when you get a phone. Don't buy anything at a phone store. Go to like one of these like kiosk things or whatever that sell the cases.
I'm getting it from my good friend Frank is what I'm doing.
Oh, I mean, you're looking at that's where we make almost money in that store too. It's like you know, plugs. I mean, they charge you like $30 for chargers. You know, we get them for like $3 and sell them for $10. It's a joke. It's crazy. Nice. It's crazy that. Yeah.
So let's go on and talk about a few other things because let's go and just back up and talk about September for a second. September is not a good month. In general, if we look at the averages going back many, many years, September is actually one of the worst months of the year from a seasonality for the markets. Is that going to change at all this year? And what are, I mean, right, the bulls still seem to have a little bit of a kick in their step. Every time something's down, they pick it right back up. They don't let it go for many days. You know, beginning of the month, everybody sells off. Then it comes right back. It's happened the last 2 months. Is September going to be... I mean, I'm not asking to totally predict, but it does seem like this September is a little bit more, is everything priced in? What's the next? I think it feels like everybody's looking for the next catalyst.
You're looking for the next catalyst, but I have to say, from my experience covering these markets for decades, when people are talking, I mean, you could talk about how many risks. Holy cow. I mean, we could spend probably 10 minutes talking about the risk, whether it's geopolitical, whether it's the wars, whether it's, you know, the high debt, whether it's, hey, stocks are more expensive than ever. You know, I mean, you can go on and on and on. You get a banking system now just recently with a couple bad comments. Are we worried about that? The carry trade, I mean, I could go in here. But when you look at some of these risks and you're talking about them, that usually means that they're priced in. Everybody knows about them. So I don't know what's going to happen in September. We may see a pullback, and I think we're a little bit high in terms of valuation because you're going to see government spending start tailing off. And when I say tailing off, we know the government's going to continue to spend no matter what, right? Both parties, no matter who gets elected. The thing is, what we have with COVID was different than any other time why we saw massive inflation, because they decided to hand checks directly to people, directly to businesses.
Right, yeah, direct.
Right, so they're not really doing that right now, right? They're like leaving some debt here or whatever. It's not going like direct. They're not handing a free check to you and saying, hey, don't worry about it. You don't have to pay us off forever. So while you're seeing that, you're seeing consumers right now. And if you're looking at the revisions, I mean, everyone's telling you how great the economy is. You have to be careful. I think where the Fed gets it wrong all the time is how quick sentiment changes. It changes on a dime, and you're starting to see that. I mean, the revisions in jobs, right? You're seeing the CPI, and everyone's like, it's coming down. We're up 22, 23% in prices for the last 4 years, and it's continued to going up. It's at a 3% rate. It continues. It's not pulling back, right? You're seeing wage growth took care of some of that in the past, you know, early on. We're not seeing the wage growth now. So it's really hurting consumers, and you continue to see prices rising.
But meanwhile,
the economy's not doing as good as everyone suggests.
Many of the consumer companies aren't getting punished too much. I mean, yes, there are a few that are getting punished. You look at Home Depot and Lowe's, for example, recently. They came out with numbers, was like, hey, just let you know, we're doing fine right now. But boy, do we see a change in the environment moving forward. And we're going to, you know, even though they beat, they would come in and they saw that they're going to guide down a little bit, which means that the next quarter is going to be even far worse than expectations if you take the whole year in total, right?
And you're seeing the separation, though, right? I mean, so the big companies do the best, right? Because they're able to actually cut costs and bring, like Walmart said, they're cutting costs on groceries. So to Target, they're doing good. You look at Costco, they're doing good. You look at TJ Maxx, they're doing good. You look at Ross Stores, Burlington is doing good, right? Those are discounted, mm-hmm. Yep. You know, retailers.
Right.
But when you look really at, Dave and Buster's, you know, okay, it's down tremendously. I know the quarter was okay and it's up a little bit, but you look at Topgolf and Calgary, they're going to switch. They went to a Topgolf name. Now they're going to take it out and switch it to a different name, right? You know, you're looking at Five Below. You're looking at, you know, there's a lot of retailers.
Well, we also, Big Lots is going bankrupt. BurgerFi just filed for bankruptcy.
Yeah, and this is a clear separation. But what you're hearing from everyone out there, every single retailer you're hearing, and you didn't really hear this a quarter ago or two quarters ago, right? This recent quarter, really. Every single one of them, even the ones that are doing great, it said we're seeing changes with the consumer. We're seeing them change. And the big companies are able to adapt. They're able to raise prices in certain areas to make up the margins. Again, Walmart just wants someone to go in their store because they know they're not just going to buy groceries. They're going to buy whatever. You need batteries. You need this, right? They just want to get them into the store. Now you're undercutting the grocery stores. You're getting people in there. I mean, these companies have been, these are 50, 100-year-old companies that have been through these ups and downs with some of the new ones, I mean, since the credit crisis and you know, aside from COVID, which everything was closed other than five stores, right? Other than the five mm-hmm. companies, which is, you yeah. know, Home Depot, all the big ones. Yeah, they really haven't been through these ups and downs and know how to cut costs like these other companies and really focus on the businesses that have the higher margins and get people in the store. So the bigger names are doing well, but you're seeing a lot of small names. And that's the difference. That's why I think people listen to our podcast, because it's finally not everything is going up every single day. It matters. You really have to look at, you have to listen to conference calls. You have to look at the underlying fundamentals. You have to see the management teams. What are they doing to cut costs? Are they finally at that point where they cut enough costs where you see revenue come back? And then you see this, you know, explosion in earnings, because not only have you cut your expenses and you know, you're operating more lean, but now you're seeing growth come back into your business, and that's where earnings explode. So it really matters where this is a stock picker's market, and you have to pay attention to people that know what they're doing, because back, you know, pretty much before COVID, a couple of years after, yeah. you just close your eyes and you would have made money no matter what stock you picked.
Well, what's really interesting is, as you said, there is a lot of cost cutting that continues on. And there's a certain level of equilibrium where you can have cost cutting that goes on, and at the same time, you're in good shape, right? Because companies will make money, people still doing well. When you start really nudging that too far, and now all of a sudden the layoffs get more, and now you start getting to a point that people don't have jobs, not just getting laid off and finding another job in 5 minutes right afterwards, right? But I mean, really, you know, unemployment going up, that's when all of a sudden things change. Now you have the mechanics of the markets, the things that are going on in the background. One of the things I talk about is people are like, well, why is the market still going up? I'm like, hey, you know what? Forget about everything. Forget about PEs, forget about all your fundamentals, forget about technicals, forget it all. Just forget it all. What's the unemployment rate? Well, it's 3.5%. Okay. Mm-hmm. What happens every single week that all these people get paid? Money gets taken out of the paycheck and it goes into the 401k plan. Mm-hmm. Money's just going to the market all the time.
And not only that, it's going to the market not just from us, but globally as well.
Well, because that's a whole different discussion.
The whole world, I mean, listen, we've been on this for a year because I happen to have great clients. And I know you do too. You have great, you know, for our podcast has been downloaded over 50 million times in over 125 countries, which, you know, again, I'm very humbled by that. I can't believe that. But the context that we have helped us out tremendously. When you hear about China, listen to the person who's the most bearish you've ever heard on China and times that by 25. That's how bad China is. China is a disaster. It's a depression. There's money coming out of China at unbelievable rates. It's almost as if the U.S. and you're living in the U.S., you work in the U.S., the Fed has cut rates to zero, they're handing money to everyone, and nobody is spending. Like, it doesn't matter, the economy. They're in depression mode in China. It's a nightmare. It's a nightmare scenario. I feel like it's underreported. People are talking about it now and saying, okay, you see Moody downgrades here and there. We knew this has been going on for a long, long time. It's very, very dangerous, China. If you don't think so, look at oil prices. Oil prices and China equities usually move in tandem.
Yeah.
And look at how they're crashing, right? It's a sign telling you that how bad China is, but just a debt bubble there, what's going on, it's crazy. But what's growing outside of the U.S.? Where are you going? Okay, India. It's hard to invest in India. Outside of India, what? You're looking at Germany's in a recession. You look at Europe. It's just there's no growth anywhere.
Stocks at an all-time high last month in Europe, though.
Yeah. But you're looking at so many dynamics at work for the U.S. where money and the flow of money and capital from foreign nations has also helped these companies. And you saw that with the carry trade of how much came out of the technology stocks when that happened, as they were leveraging, right? They're leveraging currency. So there's a lot of money just flowing into the market, not just 401ks, but, even outside.
Sovereign wealth funds. I wouldn't be surprised if major... I wouldn't say outside necessarily of sovereign wealth funds, but many of these nations, like Japan itself, are investing directly. The Bank of Japan, I would not doubt they're investing directly in our stock market.
Absolutely.
Absolutely.
That's where they're going to go. They're going to go where the growth is, and we're still seeing some growth. But yeah. I see the economy slowing. I see a lot of signs. I don't think it's like this ultimate crash, but I just hate when people are out there going, the economy's fine. It's awesome. The jobs are great. The revisions are in the millions.
Revisions were bad. That revision, that 800,000 revision of the last year, plus the revision last week of the numbers recently, when we went to a 4.2% added, what did we add? 120, what did we add last week? 140, 120? I forgot what it was. But the point is that, the revisions from the last month's, we're also down 25,000, 50,000 over the last couple months.
And I'm seeing things roll over. We always focus on what? CPI, got the PPI, ain't got the jobs.
Well, that's what they want us to focus on. They just want us to see the other stuff. That's the focus.
They're lagging indicators. If you look, a report came out a couple of days ago. It's a lot of people probably never heard of it. It's the NFIB Small Business Optimism Index, right? And it went from 93.7 to 91.2. You don't think it's a big deal. If that's the largest amount it fell in 2 years. That's a leading indicator. If you look at the Beige Book and listen to what they're saying about jobs, how they're not hiring anyone unless they're really qualified, they're cutting back, they don't see the job grow. If you read the Beige Book, you would think we're in a recession right now, if you read the Beige Book, and that's what the Fed sees. So, depending on what you want to focus on, with the CPI, you're like, oh, okay, the headlines, inflation's coming down when prices are still going higher and higher. And the job market keeps getting revised. I'm just not in the camp that the economy is all fine and everything's great. I'm not saying it's a recession, but I see the deterioration where every month that's gone by, especially over the last 3 months, has gotten worse. And if it continues to get worse over the next couple of months, and it looks like that's the trend right now, I would be careful. You're going to see a lot of probably expensive names that aren't growing earnings that fast are going to get hit even harder.
But here's the problem. Here's the issue. If you actually have a slowing economy, not a soft landing, not necessarily a crash landing, but if we have an economy that is slowing significantly and the jobs growth slows down and people are no longer working, their capital that they have saved, which is at the lowest level since, that's a problem because that will be eaten away so much more quickly than it was, let's say, 2 years ago, because prices are absurd. Before this recording started, you and I were talking about prices, and we were like, we just kept saying, oh, terrible. Oh, my God. We talked about—
Horrible. I'm changing my spending habits because I'm laughing. I went to Vegas a month ago, right before school started for my kids.
I know. You went from the $1,000 table to the $500 table, Frank, right?
I know. I got to take it easy with that stuff. We went to this place, Area 15. It was really cool, and my daughter's like, oh, can I get this candy bar? It's a regular-sized candy bar, but it was like a cell phone. I'm like, yeah, sure, okay. It was $7.50. And I actually said to them, and I said, I didn't mean to say it out loud. I said, are you effing kidding me? Are you kidding me right now? I was like, sorry, you're putting that back. I'll buy you four candy bars someplace else.
Yeah.
It's just like they almost giving you the finger with these prices right now. And one thing you talked about, which I wanted to elaborate a little bit more on, is when you're cutting costs, fine. You know, sometimes, especially, you know, people using AI, we're using AI, we're able to cut costs dramatically, just, you know, in expenses. But, you know, when you're cutting costs, especially in the retail industry, what are you seeing? I don't know if you've been to Chipotle. I've loved that brand for such a long time.
The
service is terrible now. I mean,
they cut down the size. We had it yesterday.
You cut down the size. You got to ask them for more. There's lines. They don't have the chicken ready. It's not as good. I threw out my meal actually when I got home because the chicken was horrible. But you see, and if you go online and you see this, I'm like, okay, maybe it's just this one place. Maybe it's just that one place. And then when you go online, you see like thousands and thousands of people all across saying this is a terrible experience. Same with a Home Depot. Same with a Walmart. When you go there, can you actually get someone to talk to? And sometimes it's difficult and you have a bad experience. And so you have to be careful because once you start ruining that customer experience, now you have Starbucks.
Yeah.
Now you have a problem where you get the CEO in, but are you really going to be, you know how hard it is to have someone that, you know, who switched from one terrible place to another and now you settle on it to get them back? It's very, very difficult. It's not easy.
And now we're all our own cashiers.
I know.
Where am I going to check out? What is that? And then you got to go through the whole thing. I got to weigh stuff, and I got to what? It's got to say these are the green grapes, and I got to look it up. And
remember when the gasoline, right? They used to fill the tank for us. I don't know if there's young people.
Yeah, full service.
They used to fill it full service.
And they do the windows and check your oil.
Yeah, now I got to get out. I got to get out. And I guess companies smartened up. Hey, they're still going to pay the same amount for gas. We don't have to freaking pull that off of
them. It's the world that we live in where we went from pension plans, from defined contribution, defined benefit plans, to 401ks. We're responsible for ourselves, and we've taken the companies have been very smart over the years to basically shift the expenses on so many different things.
Yeah. Do less work and hire and raise fees.
Correct. Next is you'll be making your own freaking hamburgers. What would you like? Okay, go on. You're on that griddle right there, Frank. You want cheeseburgers? Cheeseburgers over there. Thank you.
There's places I go to here in Florida, in this barbecue place or whatever, and you order and they give you a cup. You got to get the soda. They're like, all right, number 7, you're ready. You got to go up and pick it up. And then, you know, you have no waitress service at all. And they're like, oh, and they're like, will you tip me? I'm like,
yeah, screw
you
that.
What did you do? You took my order. You know, I was like, yeah, if you come, you service me. They don't even provide the service. They give you
a cup. I was in Europe last week and there's no tips on anything, right? I was in 3 different countries. You get your bill. There is no room to even put a tip. There's nothing there. And I'm like, hi, I'd like to add a little something for you. And they're like, okay, let me do that afterwards and stuff, right? But it's not common practice necessarily because they make a different, they call it a living wage over there. And it's all, you know. But meanwhile, prices were absurdly low throughout the, you know, taxis and in a couple places were expensive.
That's incredible.
But generally speaking on that, prices were low. Food costs were low. Wine costs was low. The transportation was reasonable. I was on one of the bullet trains going like 220 miles an hour. From where was I in? Was that in, I think it was in Spain. No, maybe it was Italy. I think it was Italy. It was just really cool. It was like, wow, look at the prices here. I'm thinking Europe's cheap. And then I'm like, no. That's not what's going on at all. What's going on is my head is set to USA prices.
Yeah.
How expensive it is.
Remember? Yeah.
Just to wrap this up a little bit and tie a bow around it, the point is that if people become unemployed, the excessive costs involved that are not backing up, they're only still going higher, is going to drain their savings that much more quickly. And actually, if we do go into a recessionary period, it's kind of close to stagflation at this point, if we stay with this kind of inflation, even at 3.5%.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if I'd go to the stagflation yet, but I will say this is, you know, yes, we're seeing inflation, but, you know, now look at the costs, right? Now look at what insurance is. Look where healthcare is. I mean, these costs are crazy. Like, healthcare barely covers anything now, right? It just feels like you're getting a bill for going to a doctor's office now for nothing. Mm-hmm. They're like, oh, you got to pay us. So these costs are really hitting you. And what's the one thing that's great for families? Again, this is a great economy if you own assets. If you don't, it's not. When you own your house, how do you tap your equity? Well, you can't tap your equity because rates are so high.
But
did you see what's going on with HELOCs and the massive surge in these things? They're through the roof because credit card rates are what, 22-25% or whatever.
People are doing it because they believe that they'll be able to refinance and come down once rates come down.
Yeah. I mean, you can refinance at you know, low double digits. Maybe, I don't know what a HELOC goes for now, probably 10-11% or whatever. But you have credit card debt at 22-25%, you know, so you could pay that off. But they're tapping the equity because there's so much equity in their homes because the prices have continued to go higher. And everyone's saying, well, they pulled back in California. They pulled back a little bit in Florida. Listen, they're up like 100% in the last 3.5 years in Florida. I know. I sold one of my houses. It's 10% pullback is absolutely, it's like NVIDIA. NVIDIA's down 15%. It's $300 billion in one day in capital. It's $3 trillion. It was a $500 billion market cap like 2 years ago. Yeah. It's a $3 trillion. It's like, when you put in perspective, it really hasn't gone down that much.
I sold one of my houses. I have 7 that I live in, one each day of the week. But I sold one of my houses.
And you have and you have 4 boats.
Hey, we're going to come right back. Let's take a quick break. But I want to talk about when we come back, we touched on and you mentioned the yen carry trade. And I want to just kind of go through there one more time. But I also want to talk about the VIX and what's going on there. So hang on a second. For all my listeners, I have a question for you. Are you interested in bond trading? Because at Interactive Brokers Bond Marketplace, you can access over 1 million global bonds, including government, corporate, and municipal bonds, all in one place. With IBKR's bond search tool, finding and comparing yields against other brokers has never been easier, streamlining your investment decisions. Plus, you can trade U.S. Treasuries around the clock 5 days a week, allowing you to react to market news and economic events whenever they happen. Enjoy bond trading with no markups or built-in spreads and low, transparent commissions, which can help improve your returns. Rated a top online broker, Interactive Brokers has won awards from Barron's, Investopedia, Stockbrokers.com, and has been Benzinga's number one overall online broker for bonds 4 years in a row. The best informed investors choose Interactive Brokers. Interactive Brokers is a member of SIPC. Visit IBKR.com/bonds and start trading today. And we're back with Mr. Frank Curzio, a man that knows a lot about a lot of things. And some people say the most interesting man in the world, actually.
Yeah. Okay.
Anyway, he's a host.
I know a lot of things. Yeah. I'm not right a lot, but
yeah, exactly. I know so much that I'm so wrong about.
You should tell my wife that line. Yeah, he knows a lot of things.
She knows so many things. With that. So many things. Frank is also the host of Wall Street Unplugged, which is a great podcast. He mentioned that at the last couple of minutes ago, that has been downloaded more times than you can imagine in all sorts of countries around the world. I left off and I want to talk about the yen carry trade. It does seem to me that these things don't just end so sweetly and so nicely and neatly. Thoughts?
I don't think it's a risk. I don't think it's a risk because it was a risk the first time around because it was unexpected. And that's always the biggest risk to the markets is what's the risk that you can't see? I mean, that's what happened with a credit crisis. It was like, okay, even the Fed had no idea what was
which
going
I don't even
on.
Want to talk about. It's a putrid that they didn't even know about this.
I mean, it's funny. Like AIG was just like insured. Like even when all the banks knew that they were dead in the water, they insured all this stuff through AIG. AIG's like, sure, no problem. I'll insure. Like nobody knew. And then when AIG goes under the whole, nobody knew the extent because they were like subprime loans. It wasn't subprime loans that killed the market. It wasn't that. It was 5%. They leveraged the subprime loans by 30X, right? And created these, synthetic CDOs where you just needed a 5% decline in housing and the whole market just blew up, right? So nobody saw that under the hood with all these offshore entities. Nobody really saw that the carry trade. Nobody saw that coming. Nobody saw that the government actually, Bank of Japan will go out there, right, and raise rates or whatever. So nobody saw that coming. Now people see it coming. So I don't see it as much as a risk where you're saying, okay, the difference between a dollar, difference between Japan's currency, if people are aware of it and they see it coming and now you have the protections in place, I'm not as worried. Could it, result in the pullback in the market? Yes. I don't think we're going to see what we saw. It's like, holy shit, how bad is this?
The first bump is usually the worst. That move from 160 or whatever it was to 145, 147 on the yen. Mm-hmm. But I still think there's room. There's definitely room down to 120 if you look technically. But also, I think if there's any kind of scare factors that come on that, the Fed's going to be more aggressive when in fact the Bank of Japan needs to be really worried about where they are in terms of raising rates. And it just seems like we're in a alternate universe with Japan in terms of economics.
I mean, how do you raise rates in that economy?
It's the first major move in like 37 years or whatever the number was, 27 years, something ridiculous.
But that's the thing. It just makes no sense. Like you're raising rate. They know the leverage on the market side, right? That the bank knows it, right? The central bank knows that leverage is when they did that. They pretty much saw, they knew it was going to result in a
collapse. They orchestrated the whole leverage to begin with.
Yeah. So now, I mean, you know, now the expectations are, okay, could they do it again? I think a lot of people are more protected. And again, they're really smart hedge funds. As much as they blow themselves up sometimes and go on the wrong side of trade and always get bailed out, which is why the world hates Wall Street, because no one ever gets in trouble or goes to jail for the stuff that they do. And they always get bailed out by our money, taxpayer money. But you know, the fact that it's on the table, could it result in the market coming back? Yes, but I'm not as so concerned, like, wow, this could happen again. I mean, we see it coming, right? We can see the current, but it wasn't even on a table. Nobody was talking about it the first time around.
Right. Well, it's interesting. You know, you talk about why everybody heads to Wall Street. You know, there was a wise man who said to me that if reincarnation is real, I want to come back not as a cow, not as a puppy dog, but as a bank. Because why not? They never fail. I mean, they do fail, but you know what I'm saying? The chances, the likelihood. Do you know how many small banks are out there in the consolidation patterns? I have people and friends that are serial creators of these small little banks that they build up a little bit. I don't even know how they get take the money from one to another, and they get all these investors to put the money in. They sit around for 4 or 5 years, and they do like a 7 time.
Yeah, there's like 4,500, I think, banks. There shouldn't even be like 1,000 of them.
I mean, that seems like a lot. That seems like a lot.
Isn't that crazy, though?
Yeah. Let's talk about the VIX. The VIX popped. We know during that whole debacle, that one-day move of the VIX up to 65, which was extraordinary, especially because I had a VIX option that expired like 4 days before. But that's a different story entirely. You know how that goes. I always go out an extra month, by the way, if I do options. Always. And I should have got another month. I should have got another month on another month, if you know what I'm saying, right?
Yep.
Although I did catch it the next time. So there was some good news on that when it went to 25. But, and I actually shorted the VIX when it was at 65. So that was great.
Nicely done.
That was nice. Yep. That was a nice trade also. But, and we just did a VIX trade for clients. Actually, last week we had like 120% on it. Point is, though, that the VIX around 20. Now, I'll give you 15 to 17 is the long-term average, give or take a little bit on the VIX. During the Obama administration, we saw some lows at like 8, which was extraordinary. But usually the VIX is a fear gauge. It moves up and down. In the 20s, 24s, is that starting to get a little worrisome at all? I don't know. Maybe not.
Is it an indicator, though? Is it? I mean,
it's just a hedge. It's a hedge.
Yeah, I know it's a hedge. I just feel like, is it an indicator of the markets? I mean, even when, you know, it just seemed like when you're looking at the VIX, it's really not pricing in as much fear as I think it should in past years. And then, you know, it's always seemed like it should have been a lot higher than what it was. And it wasn't, even considering even, you know, after COVID, right? And then we had this big bounce back and everything. But for me, it used to be much more reliable, I think, pre-COVID than it is now. But you know, listen, you're great at trading that. So stay with it.
I mean, well, I just find great. I find it pretty fascinating. I don't usually get too close to it because it doesn't make a lot of sense. I agree with you with that, you know, and some of the things that we've seen recently with, 2022 is a great example where, you could have been VIXed up to the hilt, market dropped off a cliff, but the VIX was like, just like, big deal. And, you know, we see the VIX, the trade on the VIX usually is if it spikes, short it. That's a better trade because it will come back down.
Yeah.
Especially those one-day spikes.
Yeah, especially one-day spikes. And you know, I'm just surprised it has come down to these levels. Where what was it, 12, 13 throughout, you know,
for a while.
2023, 2024, right?
Yeah.
It's just, yeah. But for me, I haven't been able to use that to really gauge where the market's going.
I agree with that.
So, yeah.
Let's talk about the debate. Well, let's not talk about the debate. Let's talk about what the market thinks about the debate, because that's more important. I'm not talking, and I'm just, everybody relax who's listening for a second. Don't get your triggered up. Don't get all the hair on the back of your neck freaking out here, because we're not going to go into politics. We're not going to get pulled into politics because it's just a stupid thing to talk about on a financial show. But we talk about on a financial show is the idea of what does the impact of this or that mean on my money? Factual stuff, not stuff that we're going to be like debating whether or not this is that, the health care plan is good or not. That's not the point.
Listen, everybody needs to vote for Donald Trump right now.
Oh, there we go. There we go. There we go.
No, I'm kidding. I'm kidding. You're right. So
here's the point. The market, one day later last week, seemed to believe that Harris did pretty good. Now, what I mean by that is, now please, those people that are always Trumpers or never Democrats, for a second, just put that aside, please. Harris was the long shot of a cackling buffoon. That is what we saw of her in social media for a year, right? And then she had a low bar coming into this. Point is that she held herself pretty well, you know, considering all things.
Yeah.
And when we look at that, we knew that there was sectors that we could look at if Trump is going to be president. You know, we want to maybe look at, you know, fracking and oil related to a degree. And we want to look at maybe, you know, some places that will see low regulatory environment that would be benefit for them. And if Harris wins, well, maybe we want to look at some of the renewable energies as an example and things of that nature. Well, what happened? Some of the names right after the debate went down that were related to Trump, quote unquote. And things like, for example, what we did, we bought the solar stocks on Wednesday.
Great job.
We bought them not ahead of the debate, right afterwards, because I'm not doing anything stupid like trying to get ahead of this, run out of this. What do you think? I mean, is this now much more of an even game, and are there any areas that we should be focusing in on?
I mean, listen, I'm a Republican. I don't know if you're allowed to say that publicly without getting back.
Oh, my God, Frank.
And Kamala Harris clearly won the debate. And if you have any debate about that, just look at Trump's stock, which was down 20%. I think it, you know, closed a little bit less than that. But, you know, going in, I look at it, I'll give you a baseball analogy. When a new pitcher comes out for the first time and pitches, he usually does very, very well because you don't have the playbook. You don't have the playbook on him. And then you go back and you look at the tape and you see his tells, and then you could, you know, you usually start hitting him a little bit better. His favorite pitch is tipping it off. When Kamala went in there, she went against someone who everyone knows what every response is going to be. Okay, you're going to say the DOJ came after me. You're going to say all this crap, inflation, all this stuff. So with her, there's so much back and forth, and she hasn't done anything in the media. You still don't know what a policy is. They try to challenge her on fracking, back and forth, you know, just back and forth with almost every single area, right? Mm-hmm. And it provided a great opportunity and a great playbook to say, okay, here, when you say this, I mean, whoever told her, I mean, this person deserved $1 million raise. To mention Wharton, you knew that was going to trigger him. Uh-huh. When you mentioned that people are leaving his events, which I thought was hilarious because the guy got shot and it was snipers on the stage and people didn't even leave his event, right?
Didn't leave.
But they knew that you're going to trigger him and you want to get him crazy and just sit back. And that's what they did. And they did a good job with that. So I don't think anyone's going to vote differently from that. I just think Trump had a big opportunity that there's moderate Democrats that know the Democratic Party has pushed way, way to the left. And you hear that every place. You hear Bill Maher and everything. Right? It's really crazy. And, you know, they're like, do we want to vote? And I don't think you convince them. I don't think, again, Republicans, especially the way the debate was held at ABC, you know, it was disgusting. I think everybody can admit that. It was terrible. Just let these guys talk. If you're a moderator, your job is not to fact check, especially if you're going to fact check, make sure you're right. But if you're going to fact check, make sure you do it for both, right? You want to make it even. You know, CNN did a pretty good job last time, and this time it was like, okay, we're going to fact check the one person, not the other. And so why am I saying that? I'm saying that because there's no one from the Republican base that are going to look at that and be like, I'm not voting for Trump now. And I don't think there's anyone from the Democratic base going to say, okay, you know, I'm not voting for
right, but that probably wouldn't have changed either way, by the way. You know, now we're talking about,
I just think there was a
markets,
little bit
what I'm talking about is markets. Markets believe from just, I'm talking about just right after, the immediate response. The immediate response was that much better chance that Harris can pull this off or at least sustain close enough to make it a real race.
If you're looking at trades, look, what do we see? We saw crypto get hit pretty hard because they've been going after the crypto industry. We saw energy prices higher, which, you know, might feel like, why would that happen? Is because they want to, you know, cut fracking, cut supply. When you do that, that's what they did early in administration. That's why oil prices went through the roof.
Yep.
You're looking at the banking sector falling. You could also attribute that to a couple of comments from JP Morgan, Ally Financial. Again, I don't think JP Morgan's going anywhere. They're going to generate.
That was a rough move on JP Morgan.
$51 billion in net income, not revenue, in net income this year. They generated $35 billion in net income 2 years ago. So if you're worried about the banking sector, don't worry about it. It might pull back. The stocks could pull back, but don't worry. We're not going to have a financial crisis. You know, you're looking at solar stocks, like you said, great trade was higher. I think as an investor, you just got to pray that no matter who wins, you don't see a clean sweep either way. Because that's when I think
you're talking about,
you win everything. You win Congress, you win everything.
Right, right.
You win everything. Because if we see that with the Harris administration, I mean, we're going to see basically right now, no deals get done. I mean, hardly any deals. Anyone, either you could be a gaming company and you want to take over like a broccoli stand and it'd be like, nope, you can't do it. Right. Everything's no immediately. You cannot do it. It's so difficult.
Well, the DOJ and Lena Khan, I mean, they're tough.
it's tough, right? You're looking at you know, attacking the crypto industry, which, you know, everyone who's legit in the crypto industry, it's interesting because the most money in donations and everything came through crypto and these super PACs. And that's why you're seeing, you know, Trump was smart to flip-flop first. And now you're seeing Kamala all of a sudden do, you know, Kamala for crypto. But you're going to see this agenda where, you know, constant money spending.
We're going to see the Kamala coin?
Maybe.
Oh.
That's good. You should actually, yeah. You
should do it. I should have said it.
Yeah, you shouldn't have said it out loud, you know? You shouldn't have said it out loud. All right, cut it out. That was a good idea. I'm actually going to take that idea from you.
Oh, thanks.
I'm kidding. No, but seriously, I think that's the biggest deal on both sides because you don't want some crazy conservative agenda. You don't want some crazy leftist agenda. As long as we don't have that, we should be okay. And you know, so from you know, trading standpoint, yes, depending on who wins, you're going to have certain sectors that should do okay. But I think that's the biggest fear where you don't want to see a clean sweep on any side. And I give the chance of that happening less than 10%. I'm hoping
I would agree with that. I would agree with that. I would totally agree with that. What else should we get close to? What else should we stay away from? Are there any things that are just flashing like, oh my God, this is not a good area right now? Or is there anything that's like, oh, dude, this looks spectacular?
I'll give you one that's both is AI. All right. So like I said earlier, when it comes to AI, AMD is not an AI play, right? It's not an AI play. I
mean, somebody tell AMD that?
Yeah. It's just the, like, they could become, right? They could become.
Oh, there's
just
a lot like, of could just be. So like, could I. If, by the way, so could I.
Yeah. You look at Salesforce is not an AI play, right? Their margins aren't going higher. You'd see margins go higher. Snowflake is not an AI play. But yet you look at an NVIDIA who's, I mean, did you hear the call from Oracle? Did you hear what they said?
That was like, ridiculous.
Do you not understand what the data centers, thousands of data centers they're opening up. And holy cow, I've been coming to this trend. It's unbelievable what's really taking place. Electricity and everything is unbelievable.
I like the Utes, by the way. The Utes I do like also. Utilities?
The utilities have been doing fantastic.
I love that.
Right?
But they're killing all areas of the markets this year.
Yeah, they're killing all areas of the market. But and even uranium has come down, right? So some of these producers have come down. And, you know, I think it's a great opportunity. I mean, where they're going to get the energy from? Even natural gas has come down tremendously. The demand that you're going to see, there's not one company, if you can send it to me, frankersresearch.com, one company that said that they're going to slow down their AI spending. There's nobody that said it. There's nobody because they're not. And the reason why they're not is because I got good contacts as well. I talked to one of the largest uranium companies, CEO of one of the largest uranium companies in the world. He just went to Europe at several conferences that were jam-packed. And who was there? You got Microsoft, you got Tesla, you got all the biggest, the hyperscalers are all there talking to them saying, how do we get more energy? Because we're going to build hundreds, if not thousands of these things.
That's why I like the utilities.
50% of this coming to the U.S.
That's why I like
them. So the utilities are good if you're looking at AI, but not every play is an AI. Like you're seeing software, this significantly threatens software companies. Okay, and we're good. We use AI and I was able to cut our expenses year over year by 35% because of AI capabilities.
Wow.
Yes, because of what we're doing, which, you know, again, some companies say they could use AI, others say they can't, or they'll just tell you about it. But
so with all that
there's
savings,
clear winners and losers in this industry, and you're starting to see that, and you're going to get an opportunity to buy some of these names, AI, very, very cheap, who still have their growth trends very much intact.
I mean, I think that's great that you mentioned that because a lot of people are, you know, just calling themselves AI just to be AI. I mean, the AMD thing, I think, is the most notable of all of that. And it's pretty amazing. The area of, Oracle hitting an all-time high is pretty astounding. Ellison would be very proud of that. And, combining with NVIDIA, NVIDIA was a slap with a potential FTC probe on monopolistic activity with 70% ownership and not letting people out of the deal. And they'll have to see how that plays out. That'll, carve a little bit into their.
They said they're not getting investigated now, or they didn't get a subpoena. But listen,
something's brewing.
You're basically so when you have Microsoft and you have Windows, there's alternatives. You have different software. There's alternatives. You know, when you look at different industries and monopolies, there's alternatives. They have the best of the best. If someone's going to use something else, they're going to take a step back in the technology, and they can't afford to. So it's interesting how they're attacking them. By the way, they had 80% market share in GPU a year ago. It's 88% now. And you know why it's 88%? And this is why Oracle's kicking ass too. Those two companies, think about who their partners are, right? If you look at Apple, Apple is always known as keeping their technology tight. Yep. You know, we're not going to partner with everybody. NVIDIA, 10 years ago, this has been in the making of them saying, listen, we're going to partner every single industry, every single company. We'll build the infrastructure and we'll have the software capabilities. We'll work with everyone in the industry. What did Oracle say in their call? We're working with Microsoft. We're working with Google. Really? I thought they were competitors. We're working with all of these guys.
Now and they have a new deal with Amazon.
thousands of clusters of what are they going to use? NVIDIA chips of all the data centers that they're using. You're seeing these partnerships where they're like, you know, those are the companies that are going to succeed the most. Oracle is just, I couldn't find one negative thing about Oracle. We have that in the portfolio and doing very well. Good for them. I've never been an Oracle fan, but man, they really benefit.
Amazing.
Tremendously.
By the way, Frank ate some words like he does every single time he's on my show. What I mean by eating his words is sometimes he talks so fast you can't hear him. He meant to say, if you have any questions, send it to Frank at CurzioResearch.com. Because he says, that. Frank Curzio Research. So yeah, that's number one.
New York comes out of me. I can't.
No, I get it. I get it. And number two, I'm going to give you my address, of course, for the free lifetime of phone cases now that I'm getting.
Whatever you need, I discovered this on this phone. I never knew this before.
I didn't know you had cases.
All
was
my
a
friends,
place.
If you need a phone, if you, they always say, "Oh, you got any phones? We got phones." And listen, you don't need insurance on any phone unless it's a year old. Like if you just bought a phone, get the insurance. Anything after that, don't ever get insurance. They're completely ripping you off. You can go to a store and get. It'll cost you about $140 to fix. It's going to cost you that to get fixed anyway. And then if you break it again, then it's going to cost you another $200-$300. But why pay the $15 or $10 every single? And by the way, don't ever, another quick tip, don't ever get insurance from AT&T, Verizon, or anything. On your phone, you could do it. Apple provides it. There's a setting in it, and you can get it, and it's usually much, much cheaper just straight through Apple.
That's because we just
saw brand new phones, but not phones all the year.
I just had a collect on the insurance. We were in Barcelona. They ripped off my wife's purse. Phone was in it. The only thing that was lucky, because I had 45 minutes to get to this next place, was that right across the street was an Apple store. I bought the cheapest unlocked phone and bought a SIM card. And we had a phone for the rest of the trip.
Good. Download everything off the cloud. Went right on it, right?
Yeah, pretty much. Some things didn't work. Like iMessage didn't work because the SIM card wasn't matched to her number. You know what I'm saying? And things like that.
Yeah.
But other than that, it was fine. Everything that she needed was there. Now I just have an extra phone that I'm sure you'll buy off me for an extraordinarily cheap price and discount compared, so you can sell it and upcharge it to somebody else in the future. That's how it goes at Curzio fixing phone business.
You know how I always take care of my friends.
I know. Frank Curzio, again, listen to Wall Street Unplugged. Go to Frank Curzio, CurzioResearch.com. Any questions, Frank at CurzioResearch.com is also the place that you can get them. Thank you so much for being a great friend, a great phone provider, as well as a great guest on the show. Mm-hmm.
Thanks, but I love it, man. Thank you.
See you. Bye. And that's going to wrap it up for this week on the Disciplined Investor Podcast. Thanks for joining me this week. And every week, lots more guests, lots more insights, lots more financial news, information, and education on the way. Thanks for joining me. I'll see you again next week. Nothing discussed in this podcast should be considered a recommendation to buy or sell any security. Past performance is no indication of future results. In addition, the information presented is not intended to be used as the sole basis of any investment decisions, nor should be construed as advice designed to meet the individual needs of any particular investor. Nothing herein constitutes legal, accounting, or tax advice, or individually tailored investment advice. Remember, investing involves substantial risk. Past performance is not a guarantee of future results, and a loss of original capital may occur. No one receiving or accessing this information should make any investment decision without first consulting his or her own personal financial advisor and conducting his or her own research and due diligence, including carefully reviewing any applicable prospectuses, press releases, reports, and other public filings of the issuer of any securities being considered. Please consider this for educational purposes only. As always, use your best judgment when investing. Horowitz & Company, Inc. is registered as an investment advisor with the state of Florida and conducts business in other states where it is properly registered or is excluded from registration requirements. Registration does not imply any level of skill or training. Advertisements are not related to the host or affiliates and are not considered recommendations by the host of the show or any affiliates of Horowitz & Company.